This is Dr. Charles Parker, and you are listening to Core Brain Journal. It's the place where I connect both fresh discoveries and interesting different perspectives from advanced mind science with the realities of real people and everyday life down on Main Street. Well, welcome, folks. Here we are at Core Brain Journal one more time, and I'm really pleased tonight to really bring you a good friend of mine. He's a coach. He's down in Florida. We'll find out more about his whereabouts in just a moment. But Jeff Copper is a guy who has made a significant contribution to what's going on with the public and professionals both understanding the evolution of ADHD medication, ADHD treatment, ADHD diagnosis. And so welcome, Jeff. We're really happy to have you this afternoon.
I thank you for being happy about me, but I'm honored and privileged to come on and talk to you. I've been a fan of you and what you're doing for so long, and I like this forum. So again, thank you so much for the invitation.
Thank you, Jeff. And then disclaimer, I got to tell you, Jeff has done a number of interviews with me, so we've been back and forth a lot. He's usually been asking me the questions, so it's a little different. The shoe's on the other foot. Jeff is an ADHD coach. He graduated from ADHD Coach Academy. He's the president at DIG Coaching, D-I-G Coaching. He is the host for three different activities: Attention Talk News, Attention Talk Radio, which is a blog talk radio, very active program, and Attention Talk Video. He's got videos from everybody out there. How many videos do you have there, Jeff, on Attention Talk Video?
I don't know. I do know this. We have over 450 combined interviews between radio and the video with over 210 hours of programming, to give you an idea, so it's massive.
Fantastic, Jeff. Excellent job, really. So with that said, just take a brief moment to fill in the gaps of that short intro and tell us a little bit about your personal life and who you are and what's going on there.
Well, personally, I have dyslexia and I have a learning disability. And growing up, I struggled in school like anyone else, although what was great for me was I was a gifted swimmer at the time. When I was going through middle school and high school, I really – from a college perspective, I couldn't get through all the college prep classes like Spanish and chemistry. I didn't have any of that stuff. And because I was a nationally ranked swimmer, I was able to get a scholarship and actually go to college, because had it not been for that, I probably wouldn't have gone. Once I got to college, I actually took advantage of the resources, unlike many students, and used all the tutors that were available to me. But my first experience, Dr. Parker, was I was taking a sociology class, sociology of sport, and I couldn't keep up with the reading. I learned to read just the first line of each paragraph and pay attention to the gist of the message, not the words. And I was able to kind of get through the books. Again, I didn't read the paragraph, just the first line. And that helped me pay attention to what they were paying attention to. And I was able to get through tests that way. But another watershed moment for me was reading is a challenge and writing is a challenge. And when I had to do my first 15-page research paper, it dawned on me that if I interviewed a subject matter expert, that I could take their quotes and footnote them in the paper, and thereby bypassing the whole library experience, which was a profound moment for me because it was a lot easier. And what I just described to you was an observation. I just sat there and began to watch myself and say, what works for me? And that was kind of the birth, I think, really, of me being what I call an attention coach. You referred to me as an ADHD coach, which I am, but I actually think that what I do is I coach people's attention. And attention is really, really unique. I mean, Dr. Parker, only you can witness what you're paying attention to. I can't observe it, and by the same token, you can't witness mine. So what's unique about attention is you've really got nothing to compare it to. And so as I've evolved into an attention and ADHD coach, my job is really to help people begin to observe their attention and to help them, or to coach them, to manage it and move forward. So that's a little bit about my background and my story, which really led into what I'm doing. And you know, you've come on my radio show or my video show, and so often we're actually paying attention to attention because it's such this unique thing, this invisible thing that people struggle with it. So I'm going to pause here for a second, see if you want to comment on that. But that's a little bit about my background and kind of why I'm where I am and why I do what I do.
Well, I think, you know, we're both, as I said offline, we're brothers from a different mother, because we are both on that same track. And of course, as soon as you start talking about that process, you are indeed talking about a brain process, not a diagnosis.
Yes.
You're talking about an activity that takes place with a person's relationship with the external world, with reality.
Yes.
And if reality changes and we don't synchronize our response to changing reality, then we're out of it. And you hear this happen all the time in a school. Somebody say, you're out of it. Well, what are you out of? You're out of sync with changing reality. And what is the main reason that people have problems with being out of sync with changing reality? You tell us, Jeff. You know.
Well, you know something? I loved what you said, but I got to stop and say, I've been fascinated for the last couple of years with pronouns.
Mm-hmm.
And people talk about it and that all the time, and I'm always lost. Like, when you talk about it, what exactly are you talking about? I mean, it's this global thing that nobody gets into any specificity to and really defines what it or that is. And I know you're so much about details matter, and I just want to kind of pause here. And let's just do a fun little exercise, because it'll illustrate kind of a little bit where I'm coming from and how I work. People talk about working memory. And I'm an attention coach, and they talk about it, but what really is it? And Dr. Parker, one of the things that I like to do is I like people to experience and see the process of attention. So what I do often with those that I'm coaching is I say, I'm going to tell you four words. I don't want you to write them down, and I don't want you to repeat them, but I want you to repeat them back to me in alphabetical order. So I'll say kangaroo, bee, heart, and teacher. And I'll be silent, and I'll have them repeat it back to me. Now, half the time, the people get it right. The other half the time, the order's not correct, or they forget a word. And it doesn't really matter if they got it right or wrong, but I begin to say, you notice the process is when I gave you the four words, you had to hold those in your memory and think of them, pay attention to each word one at a time, reorder them in a new list without forgetting that old list, and repeat it to me. Now, that is working memory. I'm not referring to it or that. I'm trying to get them an experience so they can witness the process. And so why is that really a big deal? Well, if you've got ADHD and you have working memory problems and people talk about it or that and you don't know what it or that is, by putting them in this exercise, they can actually witness it in their mind, the process. And that's why they'll understand when they walk in the door from being at work and they've got the dry cleaning, they got the briefcase, and they've got to go to the bathroom, and they've got this thing, and the spouse walks up and tells them one more thing, how you begin to forget and lose stuff because you can't hold that in working memory. And so with that exercise, what my job is to help people witness that in their mind and begin to come up with structures at the point of performance. When you walk in the door, what are you going to have there so that you can begin to get that stuff out of your mind? So I want to pause here and let you comment on that a little bit. But I use that example because I'm not just not talking about working memory of that it or that. I want to define it with precision. I want people to understand it as a process so that now they're empowered to manage it. So thoughts?
Well, I think that's a great quick summary of what we've been talking about for so many years, Jeff. And it's an absolute strong argument for looking at the evolution of the current limited reductionistic diagnosis. That's what it is. It is a label. And,
yes.
And people are not labels. And, you know, Machiavelli says, when you label me, you deny me. You know, so
yep.
The issue is it doesn't really exist in
yes.
reality, because if reality is not time bound and it's not
yep.
stuck, and what's happening is people hate being put in boxes. It's one of the problems that people don't want to come and see a shrink for or do a coach or do anything, because somewhere in there, there's stigmata associated with whatever that is in their mind or
yep.
what others it is
yep.
in their mind. And labels are so counterproductive.
Yeah, and can I tell a small story? This is a very
sure.
true story, and it's a fun story. I was coaching a couple one time. They came to me, and I know this sounds kind of hokey, but you get some funky things. They wanted me to coach them on their dining room table. It was a mess. And I said, oh, tell me what's on the table. Of course, they said stuff. And after asking them a gazillion questions. They finally told me the mail and the blah, blah, blah. And I asked them where they came into the house. Anyway, all that aside, I'm asking questions to understand what they're paying attention to. And I said, okay, tell you what, where are you going to put the sorting table? And there was this pause, and they go, what do you mean? I said, well, where are you going to put the sorting table? I said, well, what do you mean? We don't need a sorting table. I said, well, I think that you do, because that is what your dining room table is functioning as. Everything comes in the house, and it's waiting to be sorted. So if you want that to be a dining room, to function as a dining room table, we need to set up a sorting table near the other door. And it was funny, because in that small moment, because again, I'm an attention coach, and I was trying to figure out what their attention – paying attention to, there was this long pause, and about 75 seconds later they agreed that they renamed the table the sorting table, and it had been working perfectly. And my point really is going back to the label thing, is when you label something, you quit paying attention to what's really going on to it. It's when you pause and look at its function or on the background is an observation that really can kind of move you forward. So forgive me, that's just a fun story I like to use to illustrate how your attention can be misguided, particularly to labels.
Underlines, Jeff, the fact that changing reality is not in the current diagnostic manual. So
yes.
What happens is, since change is not in there, time is not in there, and almost all of what you and I deal with every day is context, time, change, and get this, cognition. Cognition
yes.
is not in the current diagnostic manual, unless you have a malady that is almost completely unable to be dealt with in a lot of different ways, brain injury or Alzheimer's. I mean, you know, you got, if you have a really significant traumatic brain injury, then you have a cognitive problem. But even ADHD is not considered to be a cognitive problem. It's amazing.
Yeah, which I struggle with that. But anyway, it is what it is.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt. I just was also thinking about that table. You are a guy that knows a lot about metacognition. You have interviewed some of the leading researchers, authorities in the world on this very topic. And maybe you could tell us a little bit about our mutual friend and metacognition and your experience with the evolution of that concept.
Actually, can I tell you a story? I really want to get that, but I want to give a context.
Okay.
And we're going to cover a lot of material here. I'm going to try to simplify a little bit. This came together as a result of me interviewing the expert. So I want to talk very simplistically about the brain, move through the biology, get into behavior, and then come into really where metacognition is kind of a big deal. So what I learned over the years is I think of the brain as a low-voltage electrical system. When a neuron gets excited, it fires an electrical charge, which is like a wave of electricity that travels down a neuron. You got billions of neurons in your brain, and everybody, this is a mental model to simplify what is an infinitely complex thing. But when this wave of electricity goes down the neuron, at the end of it, it's got to jump from one neuron to the next over the synaptic gap. In order to do that, neurotransmitters are sprayed into that gap, kind of much like hairspray, to allow that charge to jump and cascade through the attention network. After that spray takes place, those neurotransmitters are sucked back in, if you will, for the next charge to kind of go through. The issue with ADHD, as I understand in an oversimplified way from the experts, is not so much a chemical imbalance, but that mechanism of spraying and the reuptake of it doesn't necessarily work quite like everybody else. And you can go talk about SSRIs and the depression stuff all you want, but in learning this kind of from Dr. Thomas Brown at Yale, I did an interview that was very profound that was at your direction, Dr. Parker, and that was with Dr. Kenneth Bloom a couple years ago, and we were talking about dopamine, and he coined the phrase reward deficit syndrome. And I remember before the interview, I was like, Dr. Bloom, I got to ask you a question. I want to spring this stuff on you, but are we addicted to drugs or are we addicted to dopamine? And before the interview, he says, oh my God, I've never been asked that question before, but we're addicted to dopamine. The drugs that we're addicted to are the things that impact that mechanism. So when I interviewed him on that, all the things, the world started coming together for me, because dopamine is the reward neurotransmitter. And if you're cocaine, orgasms, music, like sex, drugs, rock and roll, pornography, gambling, acts of daring, exercise, all of them impact that mechanism, and it can be, you can self-medicate with that. And all of a sudden, like light bulbs were going off left and right in me, said, you know, if I began to look at ADHD as a dopamine addiction, what would that look like? And as a coach, I began asking questions, trying to understand what your own dopamine blueprint is. Like, what is it that you get your fixes on? So as this is going on, I was interviewing Dr. David Now, and we were talking, what does dopamine feel like? And it's not a happy feeling. It's not a warm feeling. It's a sensory, like a booyah, like, yeah. That's what dopamine feels like. And when I began to hear that, I mean, you talk about like cocaine or nicotine and these types of things, like it's this rush. And I began to think, wow, if your brain is like Pavlov's dogs and it's pushing the lever to get the reward, you keep pushing it. And if you don't get the reward, then you don't push the lever anymore. And then all of a sudden, an epiphany happened in my head. Dr. Barclay is talking about ADHD as an executive functioning issue, and the largest of which is self-regulation. I'm like, oh my God. Like, an alcoholic has a hard time. Their issue is not drinking, it's walking away. And I began to think, these kids that play computer games, their issue is not paying attention to them, it's stopping and going to do their homework. And all of a sudden, I mean, just the world started coming together for me, because I began to say, look, Dr. Barclay's theories that it's a self-regulation issue, which he defines as an action you direct back on yourself to change your behavior, to change the future. It's a future-directed act. And the alcoholic, I need to get up and leave the bar to go home to do some work. Oh, my God. And I began coaching people, looking at those things that they do artificially to self-medicate, but also those things that they do that are good, like solving puzzles and problems where they kind of get that dopamine thing. And I began to look at it and say, from a coaching perspective, oversimplified, Dr. Barker, what I do is I begin to look at what they can pay attention to and help them adjust the environment to use that to get around what they struggle to pay attention to. And in this moment that I've described, is if you can begin to say, hey, listen, I have ADHD and I'm a dopamine junkie, and you begin to witness this in your mind, you can actually begin to control it and or manage it. So what does that look like? I'm just going to throw some fun things around. One thing that I've learned about those with ADHD, they hate to be bored. They got to get the juice from somewhere, and sleep is a real problem. As I've learned, that time when you put that head on the pillow before you fall asleep is the boringest time of the day. And those with ADHD, their issue is actually getting to sleep, because they're always trying to do something and their brain is revving. And if you can pause and say, wait a second, this is what's going on, I need to calm my brain down, maybe play solitaire or something like that, you begin to manage things in a different way. We can talk about a whole bunch of other stuff, but I want to pause here for a little bit, because if you begin to look at it within this model, which again was strung together with a whole bunch of people, you have medications that help you focus, but at some point in time, it's really cognitively about witnessing your brain in its own habitat and then beating your brain at its own game. And simplistically, that working memory exercise that we did was to help you witness working memory in your own brain. And now that you understand it, we got to create the environment so you can beat your brain at its own game. So with that, please, thoughts?
Well said. I mean, I think the issue there was what you did a good job of is putting together the actual biology, synaptic level of biology, even from Dr. Ken Blum, who has, you know, a number of very interesting things written about it.
Yep.
And transitioned it to what it looks like in the clinic, what it looks like in the office, what it looks like in the home, what it looks like in your personal life, which is how you actually handle yourself and watch yourself handling yourself, which gets into the concept of executive function. Are you managing yourself well, or are you not managing yourself well? I mean, that's as simple as that. And once you do that, I mean, that was a very excellent summary.
So here, this is what's interesting to me as I've come to look at this. Like, and Dr. Barclay, if ADHD is a self-regulation issue, you need to regulate your attention. You need to regulate your emotion. So emotions are much a part of ADHD's attention. And he says no, but I say you have to regulate bodily movement. And so what was fascinating to me is I began to look at it this way. All of a sudden, I began to see everybody's talking about the exact same thing, but they're using different language. So let me give you an example. I had the opportunity to interview Autumn Zatani. She's the head of the curriculum at Sesame Street. That's the TV show, the website, the apps, YouTube, and all of it. And in season 43, what they did is they realized self-regulation was really important to learning. And so what they began to do in the shows is to help kids identify emotions and put a name with it, encourage them to feel it in their body. So when they felt this stiffness that was anger or frustration or whatever, their body doesn't lie. That was the trigger to get the pause for them to recognize it. And then what they would do is they'd model with the kids how to belly breathe. In your mouth, out your mouth, over and over and over, and then they would count 1, 2, 3, and then they would brainstorm. Because when your brain gets threatened and it goes to that fight, flight, or freeze response, or you get into that heavy emotion and you can feel it in your body, you can't remember what to do. You've got to downregulate your emotions to bring your executive function online to think what's going on. And I'm like, oh my God, this is what they're describing. But then there's Melissa Orlov, who talks about ADHD when couples, you feel that flooding feeling and how you've got to back off and you've got to breathe, and then you get into what's called a structured conversation. All of these are to notice that feeling, to back off, and you do this thing to downregulate your emotions, to move yourself away from that trigger so that you begin to think. Now, in coaching, I worked with some people where they feel it, and sometimes they splash cold water in their face, sometimes they run, sometimes they draw. But it's the same process, which is actually, as Dr. Barclay described in one of my interviews, very, very similar. So it's that noticing it, pausing, and applying that thing that helps you downregulate your emotion. And going back to my point is that process of catching the trigger, pausing, and doing this exercise to bring down your emotions so that you can regulate your emotion. Everybody describes it with different words, but the process is almost ubiquitous across the board. And I'm talking about Sesame Street that's not dealing with ADHD. They're teaching preschoolers how to do this. And so it was just amazing to me how that stuff is all kind of come together and validating. And that's why I go back to the premise of the show is I'm an attention coach, and my job is to help you witness those things and manage your attention or manage your emotions for your intentions. So I need to pause there and let you chime in.
Well, I think that's, you know, what you've done again is done an excellent summary of the practical application of coaching. A lot of people don't even know which coaching is. I mean, we're mentioning names here that you and I know, but other people don't know. I mean, yep. Richard Barclay is one of the foremost authorities. Tom Brown is one of the foremost authorities on the whole biology, the research that has pulled together the thinking regarding executive
yep.
function.
Yep.
And so what's happening, and you're describing in detail what happens when a brain is actively involved with that person's changing reality and how
yep.
they manage it. So I think it was a good summary. Let me ask you, switching the topic a little bit, take you down the path of what you see. This is a little more sort of global observation question, but what do you see as the big problem with the current stigma, the labeling? I mean, what can you, from your experience in talking to all these very interesting people who themselves are experts in studying ADHD, the implications of executive function, and the pervasive effects of what it means to our society, what do you think is a sticking point for the relatively slow evolution to really using neuroscientific principles to actually treat? In a way, you're taking a position, which you didn't say this because it would be too self-serving for you to say this, but coaches, generally speaking, that I've spoken to, we've interviewed three or four coaches already, and what they do is they do a good job of actually doing what you just said. They deal with the person on a functional level. Why isn't that getting translated over to medicine? How come we're still sort of developmentally arrested back in the dark ages of labels that are inadequate to deal with the complexity of human beings?
Okay, so let's just talk about the function of a label first. Number one is when you're trying to communicate with somebody, if you can name something, it makes it easy to communicate. A pill, okay, that's just a label. When you a pill, now pills are very, very different, but when you say a pill, everybody knows it's not a bus or a car or whatever. So there's some efficiencies and some really good reasons why we label things. But, and I'm going to slow down here because I want everybody to pay attention to this. When you label something, you no longer pay attention to it. Let me give you an example. The color red. When I say red, everybody thinks red. But there's an infinite number of shades of red. But when I said red, you thought of one single shade that kind of came to your mind. And so the problem, Dr. Parker, is as we need to label things to communicate them, but when we label them, sometimes prematurely, we no longer pay attention to them, even in the face of the fact that it's clear they're not there. So let me go back to my prior conversation. Dr. Barkley is saying that ADHD, we know it's in the prefrontal cortex. We know that's where it is. We know it's an issue of execution, yet we're not saying it's an executive function. It's a deficit of attention. Listen, this is not making any sense. If a child cannot pay attention, then how could they pay attention for things on hour? And so when we labeled a deficit of attention, people no longer pay attention to anything other than show me that deficit of attention, which brings about a phenomenon that I call attention blindness, is because when you are looking for that, you no longer can see the blinding flash of the obvious. And so it puts blinders on of sorts. The cool part is like Dr. Barkley, he began to say, listen, this, if the obvious solution isn't working, you're paying attention to the wrong thing. And if it's obvious that the person has a deficit of attention and they can pay attention for hours, we got the wrong model.
So true.
What's fascinating to me is he began to take a look at executive functioning, which was funny because when he got into it, I think back in 2010, there was no consensus definition of it. It was like a dog's breath. It was like anything go. And he found and said, listen, we don't know what that is, but everybody says that self-regulation, that is a major one. I mean, we all agree on that, and that has a great definition, and he began to use that. And so what's my point? My point really is so often people label things, and they get stuck on the label, and they're not observing what's really kind of going on, and they tend to perpetuate things that don't work. And I want to give you a practical situation of how that plays out in my world. Time management for ADD is a challenge. If you have a hard time with time management, what's the obvious solution? Get a timer. Okay. So people set the timer and it goes off, but they don't get up and they do anything. Well, I have to tell you, is if you're getting your dopamine juice from the game that you're playing, it's whatever, that's like telling an alcoholic to leave the bar. It's not going to work. But anyway, that aside, I was working with a woman one time. She was struggling with this, and I was just really trying to observe and not think about this solution is going to be whatever for her. And I said, you know, we know that you're very tactically sensitive. You know, Dr. Park, these are the people that cut the label out of the back of their shirt because it distracts them stuff a little bit. And I said, you know, I wonder what it would be like if you had something that would vibrate on your skin at the appointed time. And she's like, wow, you could see like there was some, like there's something to this. And so she went out there and she got this thing and oh my God, it worked. I mean, it worked really, really well. And I'm using that as an example.
Take a moment to explain that for just a second, because when you went past that pretty quickly, what was the vehicle? What was the device?
I think it was called a monitor or something like that. It's this little device that you set a timer and it doesn't chime. It doesn't pop up, but it just physically
vibrates. I got you. Okay.
And so because she's sensitive to it and it's on her skin, when it vibrates, it's so distracting from her. It jolts her attention away from what's going on, and she's able to pause and then make a conscious choice. Whereas the other person before with the alarms, they learn to tune it out.
In a way, it breaks the recruitment that's going on with the dopamine, because it actually takes your attention physically away from something that's going on cognitively.
Now, I'm giving you that story because if I was stuck on the label or the top 10 list of obvious solutions in the self-help bookstore to manage time, I couldn't get there from here. Because I would have kept reapplying the obvious solution even in the face that it wasn't working.
Yeah.
And going back to your point is that, as I say, if the obvious solution isn't working, you're paying attention to the wrong thing. That's my litmus test across the board. It's almost ubiquitous. It's not you need to try harder. It's just you're paying attention to the wrong thing. So let's try to pay attention different. And so going back to your original question, the reason people are so stuck is they're so attached to the labels, and they get to that nobody ever got fired for buying IBM stock, even when it went from 160 down to 40 back in the 80s, because they stick to it because it's there and they don't venture out of it. And that's a problem. And that's, as you know, I'm a fan of yours because you're about precision and you're about getting to the details and you're always looking for, hey, we're trying this and that medication's not working. We're missing something here. Either there's another diagnosis or it's got to go through the body and it's not getting there. Maybe it's the digestive tract or gluten sensitivity or whatever. Those are the types of things that I think need to be out there. And that ability to make an observation is not a skill. It's a bit of a talent. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily taught. So in summary, I think we're stuck because people label things, they quit paying attention to it, and the ability to make observations and to observe is no longer taught, and there's people out there that are just brought to it like yourself, and we need more of that. So,
well, the nature of the reality of the universe, getting a little deep right here, but you've taken me there, so I'm just going to respond to you, is that we have this changing reality that's going on a regular basis. And one of the things that happens, I saw this when I was working in addiction medicine for years. We had people coming in and they had all these different problems, but very similar. They were pouring whatever substance on them so they didn't have to deal with reality. One of the things that happens with reality is if you ignore it long enough, it will bite you where it hurts. So then what happens? And we all know that because you work with that as a coach, I work with it as a physician, and anybody listening to this knows that that's the nature of reality. If you ignore reality and it's changing, and you don't make an internal adjustment to it, and this is what working memory is all about, if you don't make an adjustment to accommodate, avoid, manage, whatever, it's going to come and bite you because that's the nature of reality. And then we have the opportunity for a transformational process. And that really is the foundation of metacognitive awareness. Then we have to start thinking about why we weren't thinking about what we were doing. And that's then the evolution of metacognition. Interesting conversation, Jeff. We have zoomed by our time. I'm looking over here. I want to ask you a couple more questions and we have to wind up, unfortunately.
Okay.
It's always fun talking to you. So the next issue would be, what do you think would be the best way from the people that you've talked to and listened to? What do you think is one of the key themes that you want to leave? Is almost like a sentence or two with, this is what we collectively should be paying attention to, whether we're coaches, whether we're physicians, whether the man on the street in any town, what do we really need to take from this evolution that's taking place in mind science regarding ADHD?
How much time we got? I'm going to put you through a small exercise. I think that you actually know this, so play along with me and bear with me, because when people talk about attention, I think that they're paying attention to the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
I agree.
Play along with me here. Dr. Parker, what days start with the letter T?
Tuesday, Thursday.
What are you paying attention to?
Those days, the T.
Most people will say Tuesday, Thursday. I would argue you're paying attention to the days of the week. And when you pay attention to the days of the week, the answer is obvious, Tuesday and Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, Tuesday and your attention's like a flashlight. It shines through space and illuminates something. So when it shines through the days of the week, it illuminates Tuesday, Thursday. Is there another answer?
Wednesday.
No.
You have something up your sleeve, Jeff. Go ahead.
How about today and tomorrow?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If you paid attention to the past, the present, and the future, you'd get the answer of yesterday, today, and tomorrow, hence today and tomorrow. Is there another answer?
Tachyphylaxis.
How about the 10th and the 13th or the 3rd?
Good for you, yeah.
my point really here is if you pay attention to a calendar, you get a different answer. And so when people start in the world, because you can see the object of attention, but it, so often people think that is attention and it's not. It's the flashlight and what it shines through that's actual attention. And so,
good point.
Oversimplified, the Jeff Coppers of the world, I'm not trying to change the object of your attention. I'm trying to get you to shift your flashlight at the level of attention. So if you go from the days of the week and all of a sudden you shine it through the month, oh my God, it's obvious that Tuesday, Thursday, the 20th or 31st. Mm-hmm. And I think that researchers, when it comes to attention, they're all talking about the objects of attention, but nobody's really learning how to observe attention at the level of attention, because that's really where the power is.
Yeah.
And it's very complicated, but I tried to give an example to illustrate that. But at the end of the day, people are looking at these objects and these labels, and that's the very thing that gets them stuck. And what I've described is no simple feat. I'm not going to say that's easy, but I know this. If you don't pay attention to it, you're not going to get anywhere, because you're going to repeat insanity because you keep beating your head against the wall. So more complicated than you wanted, but I hope that will get people to think a little bit.
No, it's fun. That was an interesting thing. It was fun to have that conversation. So, Jeff, where in closing would you like to have people connect with you? You tell us a little bit about where you want to send them and what you'd like them to do.
So, as I've said, I'm an attention coach. Our tagline is Dig Coaching Practice, excavating the aha daily. The aha is just an observation. It's the eureka. I encourage you to go to digcoaching.com/bundle, B-U-N-D-L-E. If you go there, you can download, number one, take our attention test. It's a real fun test. You'll have a bunch of ahas in it. And then there's a bunch of other interview lists and video lists. Matter of fact, there's a list of many of the people that I referenced here. Real fun stuff to kind of educate you on what the aha is all about, help you begin to manage your attention and learn a little bit more about what we do.
Thank you so much, Jeff. It's fun talking to you in this context. And you got a chance to actually say what you were thinking about when you were always listening to everybody else say what they were thinking about.
Well, so, I couldn't have done this unless I had talked to all you guys first. So I'm just parroting back what I've learned from the experts. So thanks for the opportunity.
A lot of fun, Jeff. Well, listen, we'll see you soon. Talk soon, buddy. Have a good one.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to Core Brain Journal. We're working every day behind the scenes to bring you reports that connect research benches with those street trenches. Here we share the complexity of mind science because, as you know, details really do matter. One of the most pervasive, misunderstood challenges is how commonplace medications, like those written for ADHD, are used so regularly without clear guidelines. If you think you'd like more specifics, take a minute to download my 2-page PDF packed with video links and references on the absolute essentials of how to start ADHD medications. They're easily available at corebrainjournal.com/start. Thanks for listening. Do connect and stay tuned. Together we can make a difference.